As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
This is The Athletic Baseball Show on The Athletic Podcast Network.
Greetings and welcome to Starkville.
Baseball Hall of Famer Jason Stark.
And then the robot said, strike.
That's why you're going in the Hall of Fame.
It's an inside the park home run, Doug Glanville.
Mike Trout is coffee at Starbucks with a double latte, skinny.
Doug, are you ready to make some podcast magic?
I am ready. Bring on the magic wand. Let's do it.
Greetings and welcome to Starkville, now part of the Athletic Baseball Show, where you'll find great baseball talk all week long and all postseason long. I'm Jason Stark. I write about baseball for The Athletic, and I am joined yet again by my good friend, writer, broadcaster, professor, distinguished former major leaguer, and the voice of Sunday Night Baseball on ESPN Radio, Doug Glanville. Doug, how are you, my friend?
I am doing great, man. Doing great. You know, every Monday, I'm usually flying from somewhere, and I'm delirious. And I think that just makes for a better show. So I'm game.
Okay, let's look for Doug's deliriosity as we go along. We have a great show today. Our friend Dave Sims, the awesome voice of the Seattle Mariners, will join us to talk about the end of the longest postseason drought in North American professional sports, 21 years down the drain. Doug, I want to ask you about the series that you just covered this weekend, Braves, Mets. But first, we have a way more important matter to discuss. Are you ready, Doug?
I'm ready. I'm totally ready.
Here's the question. Is there such a thing as a Starkville curse? Now, I know we've laughed about this in the past, but it's time that we need to get to the bottom of this, because let's review the last week. Last week on this show, we had Tom McCarthy and Scott Fransky, the Phillies' two great play-by-play men, to talk about what looked at the time to be the Phillies cruising into the playoffs, which would mean the demise of another postseason drought. Phillies not playing a postseason game since 2011. Things were looking good, Doug, and then what happened? They went to Chicago for three games. Just to review, how many of those three games at Wrigley Field did they win, Doug?
That would be zero, and that's their season total against the Cubs, unfortunately, for the Phillies.
Right. Yes. So they got swept. And so as we discuss this, we're going to ignore the part where the Phillies then beat up on the Nationals over the weekend and got themselves back in position to win that final NL wildcard spot. Think about that sweep in Chicago. Here's what I need to know. Was that sweep about them, or was it about us? Was it about the curse of Starkville?
You know, in positive thinking world, I think it's not so much we curse someone. We might have, what's the opposite of a curse anyway? A charm? I don't know.
Charm. Let's think about it.
Yeah, I think we charmed the Cubs. I think that's what happened.
How? We never talked about the Cubs.
Well, maybe because I, you know, I have Cubs blood, you know, so I think somehow.
You definitely have a little Phillies and Cubs karma that you could affect at any given moment.
Yeah, so I'm trying to think positively. I think we just positively affected the Cubs. It was just by some sort of osmosis or some sort of process.
Uh-huh.
So, yes.
Okay, so that, all right, well, yeah. That's possible, but
so
here's
the
thing.
Charmers.
Here's
we're
the
charmers.
Thing, though. We, yeah, we are charmers. That's what they always say about us. But see, we've had a bunch of these. The first one that came to mind was last year. Remember the Royals got off to a great start. I think they were even in first place. So we invited our friend Rex Hudler to join us. And right after that, didn't they lose something like 16 in a row? I don't know. I didn't look it up, but it felt like 16 or 50 or something in a row. Then, all right, then we had this year earlier, we had Perry Minassian, the Angels GM. He was on with us. They were hot. How'd that turn out for them after he was on the show?
Well, in those cases, in the case of the Royals, we charmed the American League Central, except for the Royals. And then we charmed the Houston Astros when Perry came on. So, you know, that's okay. It's still positive.
Uh-huh. All right. Yeah. Well, I don't think anything of what you're saying makes any sense, but I will say that despite all the suspicious circumstantial evidence, it's just circumstantial. That's all it is. If charged, I will always plead not guilty to this stuff. You know, people are always accusing me of stuff like jinxing no-hitters. I'm just going to say in response to this what I tell those people. I never threw a pitch. Not guilty. Okay? All right. Now, one more thing before we bring in Dave Sims. You were just in Atlanta. You watched the Braves sweep the Mets. It was incredible to watch. The Mets lined up Jacob deGrom, Max Scherzer, Chris Bassett to pitch those three games, seal first place. Instead, all three of those guys got beat up, and now it's the Braves who are in first place. So the Mets held at least a share of first for 175 days, according to Baseball Reference, and they're not going to finish first. They once led the East by 10.5 games. That was back on June 1st. And they're not going to win the division. And that's going to make them the first team to race out to a lead that large. So in other words, 10.5 or larger. And then not finish in first since the 1995 Angels. So, all right, you were there. Here's my question. We know the Braves have basically played like the Dodgers now over the last 4 months. That's how hot they've been. But if the Mets watched a 10.5 game lead disappear on them, are the people listening to this, are they authorized to use the word collapse to describe what happened to the Mets? This is important, Doug. Think carefully before you speak.
I'm going to say no. I collapse is just... I don't know what the Mets' record in that period. Maybe it wasn't as stellar. What was it? It wasn't like the Padres last year or something.
No, not at all. From June 1st until the Braves chased them down over the weekend, the Mets played at a 96-win pace. So in other words, if they had that winning percentage for the whole season, they'd win 96 games. They had the fifth best record in baseball over those 4 months. There were only four teams that had a better record than them, and the Braves still caught them. So, like, I've spent almost my whole life living in Philadelphia. I know what collapses look like. They don't look like this to me. But, all right, so I just gave you the facts. What do you think?
So no, it's just not a collapse. And when you have a team as good as the Braves have been, it's just hard to stop them. They have been unconscious. And you look at, you know, when that happened. I know in May when Dansby Swanson started hitting, Michael Harris eventually came up. I mean, you have Austin Riley, you have Acuna, you have Albies who's hurt, but then you get other guys like Arcia. I mean, everybody in that lineup is dangerous. And although they strike out a lot, they hit a ton of home runs. And I mean, yes, the fact that this weekend we witnessed the Braves hit home runs off of DeGrom, many of them. Home runs off of Scherzer,
yeah.
Bassett. I mean, those are, you know, three incredible top flight pitchers that they beat. So you have to be really good to be able to do that consistently. And by the way, the Mets may still win 100 games. I mean, that's a great season. And Buck Showalter, you know, talking to Buck, he's like, come on, you know, you come into a year and you still win 100 games. That is a fantastic season. That's hard to do. And, you know, you have to tip your cap to the Braves. The Braves' bullpen has been unbelievable, especially after they got Iglesias. He comes in and just giving up one run in, like, whatever, 30 innings or something. You have, you just have such a good pitching staff that, that knows how to close games out. And then you have the hitters that have struggled in September, the guys who've played every day, like Riley or Olson or Swanson, they put it all together when it counted. And now this past week, they're unconscious. So good timing as well. So I you can't call it a collapse. You just think the Braves ran them down and the Mets are still a phenomenal team, but they're going to have a harder road. Most likely they're not going to hit.
You know, a lot harder. Hey, this is a huge thing. I wrote something a few weeks ago that if they didn't finish first, then it put them, it really reminded me of the Dodgers last year, okay, where the Dodgers, like they won 106 games but couldn't chase down the Giants. And so, like that last weekend of the regular season, they pitched, let me think about this, Kershaw, Urias, and Bueller trying to win the division. It didn't get them there. Then they go play the wild card game. Had to use Max Scherzer and five relievers and win on the last pitch. Then they play this exhausting division series against the Giants. That goes down to the last pitch. Have to use Max Scherzer relief. Then have to fly across the country three times in a week playing the Braves. They lose the first two. Now they're back on a plane across the country. And it was it exhausted them. And the Mets now fall into exactly the same pattern, because even if they survive the wild card series, now they've got to fly out to LA and they're going to be back and forth trying to survive. This is a lot to have to deal with. And using up bullets for DeGrom and Scherzer, that's like the consequences of this are enormous. But is it a collapse? Now, I had to contemplate this. I was writing an awards column and when I first write the first draft of the column, Buck Showalter is my National League Manager of the Year. And then the Mets go out and get swept. And so I had to contemplate, what did that mean? But I don't think they collapsed. I looked up the definition of collapse. Like, there's a bunch of them, but it's stuff like to fall, to cave in, to crumble, right, to break down. That's not what happened here. The 2007 Mets, they collapsed, okay? The 2022 Mets, not a collapse. Now, not a good weekend, get that? But here at Starkville City Hall, we're decreeing that all uses of the word collapse to describe the 2022 Mets will result in a fine or probation plus a ban from purchasing future pie at the Starkville Diner. I think that sounds pretty fair. That's and fair. Just
and,
to me.
And by the way, like if this was another era, they would have not even made the playoffs. Only one team would have made it, and they would have been home.
Then that would have been that would have been different.
They're still alive, so
yeah, they're breathing. they're breathing hard, but they're breathing. So that's my ruling. Sounds pretty fair and just
sounds
to me.
Good.
Do we have a gavel? Can we sound that gavel?
Okay. But, we can gavel it. Judge, Aaron Judge has spoken.
All right. The gavel has sounded. Case dismissed.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, time to welcome in this week's special visitor to Starkville. It's our longtime friend and one of the great broadcasters in the game, the voice of the Mariners on Root Sports Northwest, Dave Sims. Dave, welcome to Starkville.
Hey, back, it's great to be back in the presence of some Philly guys.
Yeah,
I'm
ready?
At home. Where's the cheesesteak from DeLisandro's, Henry Avenue?
Yeah, that sounds good. It's lunchtime here. Stop it. You know, Dave, you sneaked into Starkville a couple months ago when I was out of town, but we couldn't wait to bring you back, and not just because we love talking to you, but because something special has been happening in Seattle. Friday night, you got to capture that moment. So before we even get going, let's relive that moment.
What a lot of anxious folks out here at the ballpark. 3-2 to Cal. The pitch from Acevedo. A drive deep to right field. Down the line. The Mariners win this game 2-1. The dream lives. They're going to the playoffs. The drought is over. Cal Raleigh. Wow. Hey now. Hey now. Hey now.
Fantastic.
Show a little excitement, will you? All right, that was Cal Raleigh becoming the first player in the history of baseball to hit a pinch hit walk-off home run to clinch a playoff spot for his team. But as you guys know, not just any playoff spot, the Mariners first in 21 years. So Dave, tell us what that moment was like for you.
Exhilaration that you dream of, and it's really happening. I mean, oh my God, I remember doing broadcasting board games back in Philly when I was 8, 9 years old, trying to be Bill Campbell, and then playing in the, playing stickball. I got to call something like this, something momentous. But people have asked me a couple of times, what did you prepare? I didn't prepare anything. I mean, I thought about, it's like from my newspaper days, Jason, you got to write a bullet and lead. And that's what that was,
Yeah.
And I wanted to make sure, hey, get the ingredients in. And I know it's going to be high energy, but make sure you get the facts right. And a couple of lines there, the dream lives, they're going to the playoffs, the drought is over. I mean, I summed it up. And thankfully, I didn't script anything. It wasn't going to be something Francis Ford Coppola or anything like that. But you wanted to make sure you touched the elements. You were raised right, and I was trained right, so came out well.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, you've been calling games in every sport for a long time, but you'd never had a chance to do that, right? Be on the mic as a team you covered, did something like that?
Yeah, that's an excellent point. When I did my NFL days, I did 18, 19 years in Westwood One, and I did NFC and AFC championship games. I did NCAA tournament games, teams that would win their Elite Eight game to get to the Final Four. But like I said, when Felix threw his perfecto back in 2012, August 15 of 2012, it was my team. It was the team I worked for. Guys I'm friendly with that I have a business, friendly / business relationship with, an organization were paid from the same trough. And, these are my guys. This is my team. This is my region. And let it fly, man.
Yeah. And guys like you become the soundtracks for those moments. And I love that the Mariners recognize that. And so they posted not just your call of that home run and what it sounded like, but the video of what it looked like in the booth as you called it. Have you watched that video? And have you thought about how the call and even that video could resonate through the years in Seattle?
We started that last year with, they put a little GoPro in front of us. Tim Walsh and his crew, he came in, social media director, came in from the Mets, a Long Island guy. And when we were making a run late last year in that last week, 10 days, knowing, what was at stake to end the drought, he wanted to document that forever. And what better way to do that than to have a GoPro recorded. So they had one on radio, they had it on TV. So when I'm on radio, I switch back and forth with Rick Riz. On TV, it's on me. And I'm still getting reaction from last year, the Haniger two-run single to take the lead against the Angels in game 161 to keep us alive going into Sunday, and then the game was over in the first inning, but that's a whole other story. So they come back and do it again this year once it looked like that this could happen. And the reaction on Twitter, especially Twitter, but all social media, has been phenomenal. From obviously people who are Mariner fans, who I'm getting these, I waited all my life for this. You're the voice of a generation. It's been amazing. It's been mind blowing. It really has been. I mean, the number of views, and I'd have to ask my son what those numbers are about, but it's a significant viewership.
Well, Dave, I mean, you also embrace a city. You know, there's something always cultural about working somewhere, playing somewhere for many years. Can you talk about how Seattle as a culture is kind of fused into this team and then this particular moment?
Yeah, let's date us all. Remember at the end of the TV show last year, that's how people were like begging, we want a winner, we want to get to the playoffs, we want to do something significant, we want to go deep. And this is a region just starved for that. I mean, they had a nice run, 95 to like a 102, and then been a lot of hit or miss, and more miss than hit, to be honest with you. Since I've been here, last year, 21 was close, 18 was close, 16 was close, 14 had a run, and 07, but the years I left out, those numbers don't bear repeating. So to have this and have that release the way it was on Friday night, people are buzzing. I mean, I come in the elevator, come into the apartment, in the elevator, and people are, hey, it just reverberates all through. And, I turn on the TV and anchor people who probably don't know baseball from football. And they're going, hey, how about those Mariners? Hey, everybody's, all of a sudden everybody's got Mariner fever, which is good. I'm not knocking it, but it's just so funny. I mean, if it's not going well, a segment, they don't even want to know you exist, but you got your hardcore fans, they have multiplied significantly.
You know, the scene in the ballpark Friday, the emotion in the park, this is one of my favorite things about being at a ballpark when something like that happens is, people don't want to leave. They want to freeze that moment. Like, if they leave, they start to lose that feeling. So they just want to stay. How long were people there that night?
I don't remember what the TOG was, but it was not that long a game. So I finished on TV, went over to radio, and just was like, whoa, look at this. And the guys had already been inside, and we had a live camera inside. So we saw when they opened up the bottles, they said, "Are you ready?" And all of a sudden, just made all over the place. And, a lot of these guys, they were working on an empty stomach. So guys were getting hammered. It was great. It was great. So Scott Service comes out, and the fan, like you said, Jason, nobody left. And then at that 10, 15 minutes left. So 10, 15 minutes, that's a long time to stand there, right? So here come the guys, and their roar, jet engine kind of roar. And then Scott Service took the mic and said, "Hey, we couldn't do it without you. But right now, let's party." Nuts was like, "Oh, this is so cool. This is a moment that people have waited for. This is a moment that people, they're going to be telling their grandkids." I mean, that's some of the stuff that people have been tweeting to me about. And even guys in the business have tweeted. I got a couple of Sean Casey said, "Hey, brother, I watched that thing 8 times, man. I got chills, brother." So I get a lot of that from guys in the business too, which is really cool.
Yeah, let's dig into this for a second. I talk about this all the time. When teams do what the Mariners just did, what they're doing, it's not just a sports experience. It's a life experience for thousands of people, maybe millions of people. When you think about 2 decades of not seeing a postseason game, we know we're from Philadelphia. It takes its toll on the psyche of real human beings, like in real life. So do you think you can put into words what you think this team and these postseason games will mean to Seattle?
Well, they will have a memory etched in their soul, like the nightmare. Like, it was interesting coming into the last couple 3 weeks when we were coming out of stretch, and oh, you guys are in them, and guys around the country called, hey, congratulations. I said, dude, we'll be in when we're in. I was 11 in 1964, 6 and a half with 12 to play. Does that ring a bell? And until we clinch, that's that I'm holding out, and then I'll go nuts. And I think now that they've gotten over that hump, I think people are going to remember pretty much every detail in that game. And obviously Cal, you know, Cal never has to buy Drake in this town again, ever. Cal Raleigh, and he had a great season, 26 home runs. They still got 4 games to play. This is a memory that's going to be passed down. I mean, it's like Giant fans back in, as a matter of fact, today is October 3rd. It's the anniversary of Bobby Thompson's shot heard around the world. The Dick Stocktons of the world, who were fans back then, who are still with us, remember that. And these folks are going to remember this for the next 50, 60 years.
Yeah, and Dave, what about the relationships? You know, you get to know these players well, and some, you know, longstanding. Someone like Scott Servais, for example, that was my teammate. He was my teammate in Chicago. And what I've learned about Scott, I hadn't talked to him over the years, this year, is that how much he paid his dues to learn all facets of the industry. He was a scout. He did player development, you know, and it seemed to have come together now where he's, you know, not only got the personnel, but able to, you know, really understand how to employ all those skill sets he has now. So what's it been like to, get to know him and then in this moment, you know, sharing it together?
I think that one of the things that he's done as he's come up with the seventh year and learning how to, his people skills, not that they were bad or anything, but they've certainly evolved over this time. And he's always stressing, hey, be yourself. You know, if you're a wild and crazy guy, as long as you show up on time, run hard four times and, you know, make catches and die, you know, all that kind of stuff. But he embraces that. And it was interesting the other day when he said about Eugenio Suarez, who I find is, and we all find to be an absolutely delightful human being. Funny. His English as his second language is fantastic. Great sense of humor. Keeps everybody loose. Keeps everybody like, come on, enjoy this. Have fun. He and Carlos Santana are big in that department. Julio Rodriguez, big in that department. Then the other thing I told Scott a couple about, I think the preview or next to last homestand. I said, I got to tell you, I waited, you know, the usual media scrum. And I learned this from Frank Dolson, to drop the name of one of the late greats, and Dick Young. You know, hey, I got to get my own stuff. I don't want to just get the, you know, I want my own nugget so I can put it on the air. And that for me, that I went for. I said, I got to tell you something. Been doing this for almost 50 years. And you're handling yourself with the media on a daily basis, come win or lose. You're doing a heck of a job. And I don't just say that to anybody. So he said, thanks. It means a lot. And I've seen a lot of the good ones, a lot of the bad ones at work over this period of time. He's done a heck of a job. And they just made Justin Hollander, the GM, Jerry DePoto, excuse me, the president of baseball ops. Those three guys, they're like a three musketeers, man. They're tight. They have a plan. They know what they want to do. They've got the analytics department and the people that keep everybody in shape, the physical fitness crew. All facets of the organization, baseball-wise, on the field, they've done a heck of a job. They really have. You have to give them a lot of credit.
Yeah, they had a vision for this moment and how long they thought it would take, and exactly when they could do stuff like the Luis Castillo deal. Jerry's made a lot of trades. I think that deal for Luis Castillo was probably the most impactful, most important trade any team made at the deadline. You should know Doug loves Luis Castillo, but you could tell us what has he meant to this team, and what do you know about him now that you didn't know when he walked in the door?
You know, I just knew I'd only seen him on highlights. I was like, man, this guy's pretty good. And then they start hearing rumors about, you know, he's available, you know, Cincinnati's not going anywhere. And the first thing, of course, I thought of Cash and the Yankees. I'm thinking, oh, geez. And I get, you know, friends up there and they say, yeah, we're going to get him. And next thing I know, the Mariners have him. I was like, you got to be kidding. And when you look at this guy out on the mound, it's like, that's a dude right there. He's got presence. He is maxing out. He's fearless. and he's coming right at you. And he's got the goods. He's got 98, you know, 99, a sink, the 2, 4. I mean, he's got the whole thing, man. So he's the number one. I mean, he's starting on Friday. Wherever we are, we're at home, we're in Toronto. He's starting. He is the dude. And you want to ride a guy like that. Robbie Ray was the dude last year in the American League. Wins the Cy Young Award. Had a bad day yesterday against the A's. I'm sure if we go to Toronto, you know, he'll be mentally prepared, mentally ready to rock and roll. So I think, and you guys know in short series, especially a best of three, man, if you got two studs that you can throw at people, the scoring's going to be at a minimum. You got to feel pretty good about that. But Luis Castillo, I'm telling you, the presence alone, I haven't spoken to him in a great deal, but the little bit, the sincerity, you know, he's got that, as late Marty Schottenheimer says, he's got that gleam in the eye, boys, gleam, you know, and it's definitely a guy you want to ride with.
Yeah. You know, I just wrote my awards column and you'll be shocked to learn that I thought the rookie of the year in the American League is a guy named Julio Rodriguez. I don't know how we got this deep into this conversation without mentioning him, but like one of the points I wanted to make about that guy was that he's not just a rookie. He's a star.
Oh.
You know, like now he's been out with that back thing. It's concerning, but I mean, you've had a chance to watch it. How would you describe that star power that's written all over him and what it's meant to this team?
Let me start by saying this. You can watch Julio for about in action. Take you 2-3 minutes. If you're not coming away smiling, something's wrong with you.
Yeah.
I mean, and you're going to know where I'm referencing. He reminds the joy and showing the potential to be like 21, 24, and 24. Clemente, Mays, Griffey. He has that kind of possibility in front of him. He's physically 6'4", 225, 230. He's one of the best base stealers in the game. First half, they turn him loose. They sort of shut him down the second half. But look for him to run in the playoffs if there's a money bag that they have to get. His exuberance, I mean, he's not – He's got style. He's got panache. I mean, he's got everything that the great ones have. Confidence without being ridiculously braggadocious. It's friendly. It's warm. It's loving. He's got the whole package. And believe me, as an old newspaper writer, you know, we don't throw those terms around. You know what I'm saying? We don't throw those terms around. You know, generously, but this kid, he had, and as let's just go back to, he has the it factor. He can play. He's got 5 tools. We're thinking, we knew he could mash a little bit, but I thought he was a corner outfielder. See him in center field in spring training. I'm thinking, are you kidding? He's going gap to gap. No problem. Got a cannon for an arm. He had a home run that hit into an entertainment area down at Peoria in left field. It was like, excuse me, want a little baseball with your martini? Then he hit one. We saw him hit one opposite field. And I was on a telecast with Mike Lowers. Julio gets one on the right. Man, it's gone. I said, Mike, he's making this team, okay? There's no equivocation. There's no, he's making this team. And the 44 jersey is going to be the number one selling in Seattle, if not the country. I don't know about the country, but I know it's number one here in Seattle.
Yeah, and I mean, I had a chance to talk to Sky. I saw him earlier in the season. Well, first I saw him in spring training, beat up on the Cubs, and then I think he hit a home run to lead off the game.
so, he did. He had a massive.
Yeah, so I remember that. So I was like, "Who's this guy?" Right? And then that was actually the day I picked the Mariners to make the postseason. So I was like, "All right, these guys." So I got that right.
Oh, good for you.
But the other thing was seeing him against San Diego, where he hit one in the metal shop down the left field line or whatever on the third.
Oh,
it almost went on the roof. And so I talked to Scott Service about it. First word he said was joy. You know, he said joy. But the other thing he talked about was his aptitude, his ability to learn and be open to just take in an input and actually apply it right away. I mean, he was stunned by how quickly he could just adapt and sort of apply new information. And so it was cool. Yeah so that was something
unbelievable.
Yeah.
And to add to that, Jason, in the first part, I want to say first month, he got no benefit of the doubt if a ball was close on the corners. He got none.
Incredible.
And he was getting screwed. And I like the umpires. Don't get me wrong. I've met a bunch of them. They're good dudes. But it was like they were testing him. And I said, if he gets thrown out of a couple of games, you know what? He will have said his piece. He will have, you know, like to you, but, you know, that whole thing. He just turned. He might have said a word or two on every occasion. And then it was like things changed in early May. And he knows the strike zone. It's the old, if Mr. Mays thought it was a strike, he would have swung at it. same with him now. And boy, once he got over that, it was up and onward, man. It was, but again, to see a kid 21 years old, he was getting jobbed. Let's just say it. He was getting jobbed. And there's a stronger word I'd use, but we won't use it on your podcast. But it was bad. And he survived it. And came away, I mean, you know, just off the chart. I mean, I can't throw enough hosannas at him. I mean, that's tremendous.
Yeah, we can document this stuff now, you know.
we know about that, right?
We know for a fact that he got called out on strikes on pitches that were not in the strike zone more than any player in baseball in April. And so I think about going from that to what he then became.
Right.
His weighted runs created plus from the start of May until his back started bothering him was 158.
Ouch.
And that's amazing for a kid who's 21 years old.
Right?
Special. Now he's back in the lineup in this series.
Against Detroit, yeah.
Yeah, these are big 2-3 games for him to prove he's back, don't you think?
I tell you, if he's back, I mean, I like our chances. I'm going to love our chances if he comes back and he can get close to where he was. Let's be fair. I don't expect him to be, you know, you can tell me probably what his peak number was. He just did, as a matter of fact. I don't know if he gets that. But if he can get 80% of that as a leadoff guy, and then defensively, covering gap to gap, Haniger and right, and I think Kelnick has earned a spot in left field because I think he's a terrific outfielder in general. That's a good outfield. That's a very good
outfield. You've seen like all these guys the course of the season. I mean, is there a description for like what kind of team the Seattle Mariners are? Like, what's their style? How do they win? You know, what's their makeup? And now you've seen, of course, all their opponents as well.
Yeah, they never give up. I'll tell you that. There's no white flag to throw because it's not in their pocket, you know. They really do believe in themselves. I mean, I said something to Paul Sewald. He says, hey, man, we want to make the playoffs. That's great. We want to win the World Series, and we think we can win. Matter of fact, I know we can win. I was like, okay, yeah, all right. You know, I thought that was pretty bold. I mean, and he said it without any kind of hesitation. He didn't cough or anything, you know. It was like, hey, we can do this whole thing, man. So when you hear that, and it wasn't just the flighty kind of just saying it to say it, he said it with conviction. Somebody said that Cleveland had a gritty team. I said, I can show you grit, raise you some grit too. I mean, this is a team. I mean, you got Matt Brash, who was a starter, converted to a bullpen guy, coming in throwing 100 with a vicious slider. You got Andrés Muñoz throwing 100, 300, 4 with a 91, 92, just good luck slider. Sewald, who had like little and no success with the Mets. We played the Mets, and Gary Cohn, is that the same guy we had? And he's been lights out for the most part. He's had a hell of a run. Who else? Diego Castillo. They call him the Diesel. He's had a great run through most of the season. So, I mean, I don't know. Bodacious.
There's a bunch of stuff I can't use.
My North Philly is coming out of me right now. I got to be careful what words I want to use. But just say.
You have the pitching, right? Would you say that's the strength?
And the pitching, yes. Luis, Robbie, Kirby, Logan Gilbert, Marco Gonzalez. I mean, you're going to focus probably on the three guys. The two young kids, Kirby, the Ryan, New York kid, Logan Gilbert, a Florida kid. You want to talk about fearless? Hey, man, let's rock and roll. Let's do this. I love that. We're here. Hey, we're here to play, man.
And you know, it's funny. This is a team that loves the data, but always outperforms the data. And, you know, last year, nobody could understand how they won 90 games,
right?
But they did. And then this year, I know it says they're 10th in the league in runs scored. When you look at the players on the field, when you look at some of the surrounding metrics, they're a better offensive team than that. And so I guess my question is, what is it about them that isn't being reflected by the stuff we ordinarily look at? And what does it tell us about what they're capable of in October?
That they come up with big knocks, you know, mid game, maybe down a couple, three runs, or up a couple, three runs, the bullpen comes in and holds it. If they're down, somebody, you know, Carlos Santana, I don't think he's past 220 yet. But he's got like five or six. I think last time I saw one of our stat guys, he had like seven hits that tied or put the Mariners in the lead. And he's hit like .197.
Yeah.
Going into the Sunday's game, the A's were last in batting average and we were next to last. But yet the Mariners were like fourth or fifth in home runs and led the American League in home runs since August 1. I mean, just crushing balls out of the yard. So I think those are the ingredients right there. I think I'd like to see, and Jason, and you could do a piece on this, August 1 numbers across the board offensively. I would think the Mariners are, you know, of the 30 teams, they're going to be high up there. They're going to be in one of the top quadrants.
Have to be. And part of that time is without Julio, which is even more amazing.
Yeah, right, which is astonishing.
there's just something about him. You know, it's funny you mentioned the Santana. I feel like the Carlos Santana trade was this year's Jock Peterson trade. You know, like a team. Ty France had just gotten hurt, Jerry wanted to send a message: the season isn't over. I mean, so he brings a guy in who, I mean, he's not a great player anymore, but he's been there, he's done that. He's comfortable in the moment, and it. If you look at the Mariners' record since that day, it feels like that trade had a big impact.
Oh, I think Jerry definitely puts his thumb on that. I've heard him, you know, talk to him, you know, one-to-one. I've heard him on other media say that. I don't think there's any question that Scott almost oftentimes talks about the culture that they've built. A lot of it has made a little turn for more upbeat, as we mentioned about Gino, same with Carlos. And he's always, even when I see him on the field, he's over, hey, how you doing today? How you doing? We always do a little dap up and, you know, we just chat. How you doing? Hey, I'm good, man. Everything, you know, and he checks in with everybody. And it's the other group dynamic. I think of how these guys, you know, not everybody takes infield, right? Before every game. We Mariners do. And before they take infield, they do the individual thing. A lot of people do this, but Perry Hill was like one of the great drill sergeants of all time.
Yeah.
And he has those guys that come out, you know, they get down and he's banging balls at short, you know, short area quickness. What do you got? He's hitting balls at him. And if, you know, he's never been sick or anything, but I don't know what happened if he had to take a day, if he had taken the day off. So that kind of ritual is part of the makeup of this team. It goes back to what you're talking about with Carlos. I mean, there's not, you know, we don't have a judge that's got 61 home runs, but, you know, we got a whole bunch of guys, you know, Gino's got 31, Julio's got 28, 29, whatever it is. Cal's got 26. So all of this stuff is working in with this ball club. It's, and again, going back to the pitching, Doug, pitching the starters in a bullpen.
You know, and so how about the, you know, the legacy players, right? You think about Ichiro, and I mean, have you, well, whether heard from them or how they sort of embraced this season?
Ichiro, I haven't seen him lately, but most homestands, he's been here shagging in the outfield. You know, I'll come to the ballpark and I'll say, who's that? I went, oh, it's he. He's like almost 50 years old. He looks fabulous. And he's still got the throwing arm, if you can believe that. He runs down everything. He's body fat's probably the same as it ever was at like 7-8%. I mean, he's unbelievable. And we, you know, we put him in the Mariners Hall of Fame. He gave a great speech. He just totally knocked it out of the park. I haven't talked to Junior in a while. And it was interesting. One of the things Ken Griffey Jr., we were talking back early in the season, they need that veteran guy who's going to grab the team by its throat if things start to go wrong or need to, you know, pick me up. Well, Suarez, and as we've already discussed, Suarez and Santana are two of those guys right there. That's been a big thing. I've not heard from Felix, but I'm sure he's smiling wherever he is in Florida, wherever the heck he is. Kyle Seager, same thing. So, you know, we had a lot of really good players come through here recently that had some just misses. Nelly Cruz comes to mind. I absolutely love him. And he says he wants to play one more year. But yeah, I'm sure those guys have a big smile on their face if you bring up the topic of the Mariners.
All right. Now, speaking of legacy, I was thinking about this. We talked last week to Tom McCarthy and Scott Fransky, the Phillies play-by-play guys, right? And then we talked to them about following the legend of Harry Callis, a guy they both love and work with.
Here's the 2-2 there, Michael Jack Schmidt. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Memories, man.
Soundtrack of your lifetime, too. So you actually have had a very similar experience with the late, great Dave Niehaus. And I wonder, do you still feel Dave's presence? And how do you think knowing him, following in his footsteps, has shaped your career?
You know, it's interesting. He is so deep in the mindset of people here. And some of the tweets that I get, you're my second favorite Dave. he really is. Somewhere Dave is smiling at you for the great job that you've done. My, oh my. I mean, I hear his phrases. Hey, Rick Riz repeat them all the time.
Right.
He impacted here in Seattle. There's no question about it. When I got here, I would start on radio with Rick Riz. I'd do the hi, how are you? And Rick and I would do three innings. And then in the fourth inning, we'd switch. And Dave, because David started on TV, and we'd pass each other in the hall and throw some of his bad years. He's coming out of the TV booth. I'm going on radio. And I'm like, I can believe this stuff. Ah! And we both like, well, you can believe this stuff. Ah! We'd have a laugh. And then he'd tell me these great stories about his days with the Angels, talking about Gene Autry. And again, so some stories we can't repeat, but they're hilarious. Back in his days with the Angels, Dick Enberg, Don Drysdale, Uke, and all those guys. Yeah, he was a beauty. You got to remember too, for the, 1977, he comes up here, Mariners, franchise starts. They were rarely on TV in those days. So the only connection people had here, they might be 15 telecasts during the course of the year. So he is ingrained in the soul of so many people here. And they didn't have a winning season until 91. So that's why even now people still get giddy when they play, the Edgar double, they still react like it just happened 5 seconds ago. But I can remember my son called me one time, I think first, second year. He said, yo, Dad, you're getting freaking killed on the internet, on Twitter. I said, well, I'm the new guy, on the East Coast, the black guy, and working with a guy who is all but just short of being the mayor of Seattle. And over time, sadly Dave passed in November of 2010. But hey, I'm a Philly guy. I grind. All right. And I've stuck with it. And now I have people, kids coming up to me now, like Matthew Boyd. We got from the Giants, another one of Jerry's trade.
Great guy.
Oh, super guy. Oh, unbelievable. Just a sweetheart. Dude, grew up listening to you, man. I can't believe you're going to be calling my games. Michael Conforto, a few years ago when he was with the Mets, I was afraid to come over, but I got to tell you, I really like, I listened to you when I was a 7-year-old. So I'm getting a lot of this back. I've been here long enough. And I think I've been accepted, but I didn't let it freak me out that I was, following Dave, but certainly a legend and a Hall of Famer. And he gave one of the great induction speeches, any broadcaster's ever given up to.
Yeah, of course he did. Hey, let's just talk a little bit about your story, because you grew up in Philadelphia, as you've alluded to, and you dreamed about being a sports writer. Did you ever dream this?
Yeah. I know I wanted to be in sports media because I've been a jazz tone Doug a while ago. I've been a jock all my life. I mean, I grew up in North Philly, where on North 20th Street, where I could walk at the buildings. It was a two family had a family. I could go out my front porch and look to my right, look south, and the Phillies are home. The lights are on. I could see the light tower that Dick Allen buzzed on many occasions. All right. So I was always going. My father worked at the post office, worked himself up into a white collar job, played softball, ran the softball league, ran the basketball league. And in those days, a lot of those guys were young black men who played at HBCUs who were really good athletes. And, you know, of course, and it was pretty integrated too. I mean, we're talking late 50s, early 60s. And as I think back, it was, you know, it was a great amalgam. I still have pictures of that. We had season tickets at Eagles. We used to go see Wilt at Convention Hall. So sports has been in my has been like mainstreamed in me since as long as I can remember. Board games and all that, yada, yada, yada. And I played high school football and basketball, started 4 years in baseball, three in football. And I wasn't good enough to be a big time D1 player, but I had a good high school career. Somebody said, you know, I don't know what you want to do, but you may want to think about getting the sports media. So I started writing for the paper, wound up going to a little school in West Virginia. Temple recruited me. I'll never forget, the guy recruited me. Wayne Harden was still a coach, and the guy that showed me around was bigger than I am. And I'm thinking, it's Skip Singletary. So he had that time 6'3", 250. I said, I can't outrun this guy. I'm not coming to Temple to play Penn State. That ain't happening. No, thank you. Yeah, we need a fullback, an eye fullback. Yeah, we're going to get you up to 230. Anyway, so I go to Bethany. A turning point in my life, I get an internship as a sophomore at the Inquirer. I get a byline my second, third day. As a matter of fact, the first guy I interviewed was the guy just passed, John Bad Dude Stearns. I interviewed him and had a story. I met Jimmy Valvano back when he was at Bucknell. So anyway, sports writer, I go to New York after I graduate, I get a job there, and then sort of meld into TV. And I got a chance to do play-by-play after I did talk radio. And then I did Temple Radio, which led to ESPN, which led to Westwood One, and then boom, 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 boom. You know. And that's how I got here. And I got a taste of baseball in 93, 94. And I told David Montgomery, we had a Phillies game one time. We were at a BNET game. And I said, Coach, I call him Coach because he had been when he was a Penn student, he ran part of a baseball clinic at Chestnut Hill Academy where I went to school. So I said, Coach, you know, I want to come back here when the time comes. Yeah, you got to bring me back. And it's perfect. No, you're a Philly guy. You know, you're bringing you home. And it never happened. But things have worked out, you know. And I think I told Doug this. In the history of Major League Baseball, I'm something like the fifth or sixth African American to have his own team. You know, the call of games for a team. You know, I think of Greg Gumbel did the Yankees for a while. Obviously, Bill White, Kenny Singleton, Paul Olden. I think there's one other guy, Billy Sample, and then me.
Wow.
And that's it in terms of calling games for a big league team. So every Jackie Robinson day, of course, everybody wants to talk to me. What's the impact? I once ran across 7th Avenue to say hello to Mrs. Robinson. We're going opposite ways. I almost took a knee. I was like, I wouldn't be doing what I do if not for you and your husband.
When you like tracked her down across the street. And
oh, man. I'm standing there. And I said, well, that woman looks familiar. I thought, it's not family. I went, oh, my God, it's Rachel Robinson. And I'm 7th and Broadway in New York, and I ran across diagonally across the street and I got killed. And I said, Mr. Robinson, I just want to say hello. You know, I'm a broadcaster, blah, 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 blah. If it wasn't for you and your husband, she was gracious. I scared the hell out of her. It was really gracious, and I'll never forget it.
So, Dan, but I've always noticed, like, even, you know, when we've met and talked over the years, like, mentorship was always important to you. As you mentioned, just being a pioneer and you know, how did you find your journey just navigating that, and then also that desire to give back to others?
Well, you know, it was interesting. Being out front, doing ESPN over the years, Westwood One, And, you know, if you're a black kid at home and you see another, like I saw Bill White, I'm like, oh my God, maybe this is possible. maybe it's an African-American. Maybe I do have a shot, because if he can do it, maybe I can do it. And I've heard from so many guys, young black guys, and a couple of them are really doing well. And I've helped them out. You know, they said, hey, man, can you take my tape and, you know, let it all hang out. Don't hold anything back. And a lot of white guys too. I mean, I'm not a one-stop shop in that regard. I mean, if a young person wants a critique, because I can remember Dick Enberg, Vern Lundquist, Charlie Jones, Marty Glickman was like my rabbi. All were extraordinarily helpful to me, and I pass it forward. And I enjoy it. And as a matter of fact, a couple of guys out of Fordham are doing really well. In New York media and national media. And there's a couple guys in California. There's a kid in Michigan. There's a kid in Missouri that I worked with, a kid in Indiana, and Idaho. So I enjoy it. I have to pass it forward. And Bill White was always good to me. So it's just, you know, it's just who I am. I think, I thank God I was raised right. I had, you know, two parents who got it and who, you know, understand the, you know, the meaning of life, you know?
You know, Dave, I know nobody remembers this except you and me, but like 22, 23 years ago, back when the young Doug Glanville was playing for the Phillies and I was still working for that Philadelphia Inquirer, you hosted the Sunday TV Phillies pregame and you got stuck.
Weekly.
Yeah, you got stuck doing a weekly segment with me. And so I'm pretty sure this is the first show of any kind that we have done together since. And I'm thinking,
that's a good call. Right,
like, how crazy is that? Suppose I told you back then, hey, Dave, I'll see you in 23 years in Starkville.
And I'll be in Seattle. no shot. No shot. I know, it's crazy, isn't it? It really does. Things do come back full circle. It's incredible. That's right, Doug. You were on this team when Tito was there.
Yes,
right?
I'll be in Cleveland too to do the wild card. So I will see him again in another context.
It's funny. I remember one of those times. I think it was the second year. I said, "Yo, fellas, I can offer more than just doing this." And I said, "I'm not going to move. I know I'm not going to move Harry out or who is it? Andy Musser, Wheels, and all those guys." But they said, "All right, we'll give you a chance to do an interview." So one of the great thrills of my early broadcasting career, bottom of the sixth inning here at the Vet. Let's go down to Dave Sims with a special guest. Dave, I'm like, freaking Harry knows my name. Let's go down to Dave Sims. That was so cool. That was so cool. I mean, Harry was very good to me. I'd see him occasionally on the football trail, see him on the baseball trail, and it was a beauty. It was an absolute beauty.
Yeah, what a guy. Look, before I let you go, you referenced the Edgar double that sunk the Yankees back in 95. Yes, do you remember where you were?
Yeah, I was at Channel 2 WCBS in New York, and I was working with Cliff Gelbart, producer, and the Yankees, they were all the way out here in Seattle. And I just remember we were being hassled by the news department, and they didn't pay attention to us at all. I remember the day of one game, the producer says at like 8 o'clock in the morning, "Hey, can you get us into Don Mattingly's house and do a live shot?" No, that's not going to happen now. 10-minute warning? I mean, come on. Yeah, I do remember. It was stunning being at the New York end. It's like, are you kidding me? So I remember it, and I've been reminded of it a whole hell of a lot here, you know, to the point where it makes me crazy. I know it's a great memory for folks here, but it's, you know, that's what I like about what happened Friday. So now when they play, you know, great moments in Mariner history.
Yeah, like we can connect the dots now. So I was thinking, like, suppose I told you then, the next time the Mariners had one of those moments, you'd be the play-by-play voice of the Mariners.
Wow. I tell you, I wish my parents were around to see this. when I was at MSG Network and we used to simulcast my WNBC show, my father came up and did an Ed McMahon, and we had the whole desk, Johnny Carson, Joey Fisher kind of thing. He did an Ed McMahon. And I had always told stories about how, you know, growing up being a sports fan. So, and we had a live audience at the old Hall of Fame Club at Madison Square Garden. We had 100 people in there. And I'll never forget, and I said, Aaron, it's my dad, Yuli Sims. And people stood and applauded. He started crying. I started crying. It was great. So I can only imagine what he was a World War II vet, real hard ass, but a softie at heart. He would be flipping out if he knew what had just happened, you know, if he had been around to see what happened Friday night. He and my mom, they would be flipping out. So it would be, yeah, it would be, who knew? I mean, you just never know. But I give them, you know, I'm not super religious, but I'll praise, you know, to the big guy up there and my parents for raising me right and giving me every opportunity. Because they always said, you know, white guys can't do this. They can't do this. They can't do this. Screw that. You want to do it, go for it. And give it your all. Go for it. Pedal to the metal. I don't want to hear any excuses. If you don't get it, at least you try it like a son, and you go for it. And I can think back. I still think back when, you know, going to games around the country doing college football and basketball games. And matter of fact, even happened in Philly one time. And I'm showing my grandkids, hey, what are you here for? You know, it's like, really, dude, you're going to give me attitude? Yeah, I'm here. So where are you going? I'm a sports writer. No, you're not. Yeah, hell, I'm not. That happened in a Phillies game one time. Bruce Keiden. And a guy gave me a hard time, and I maintained my cool. Bruce wanted to kill this guy, and I'll never forget that. And because I helped, I maintained my cool, and Bruce reported back to Tim Kelly, who since passed away, the sports editor. And I was in the second year of my internship. It was a night I was going down to cover Phillies, and I got the Phillies lead story. That's just like August of 74, right? But I maintained my cool. And my letter of recommendation or my evaluation letter that went back to my advisor in school was like glowing because I'd done a good job and I maintained my cool under pressure in a situation like that. And I've since seen more of that. You're here to do play-by-play? Yeah, right, pal.
Well, Dave, your story is special. Your call of that Cal Raleigh homer was special. And I know there's some magic ahead coming up for you and the Mariners. So all I can tell you, it's always awesome hanging out with you, man. So glad you're able to make it to Starkville with me here.
And that's right. I missed it last time.
I know, right? So I hope our paths cross in October. Thank you so
Amen.
Much.
I appreciate that, fellas. Thanks for the opportunity to come on. Always enjoyed watching you guys, reading you, Jason, watching you, and Doug Great seeing you at San Diego a couple of months ago. And I really appreciate you guys giving me some time to tell the story. Appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Pleasure as always, Dave. Thanks so much.
Guys tend to think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort, but it's possible to have it both ways. I'm all set for summer thanks to Mack Weldon. The Vesper polo shirt is so breathable you can wear it on the golf course, but it looks classy enough to wear to a party. The Maverick Tech chino short is ultra flexible, and the Pima crew neck t-shirt is perfect for those casual weekends. There's no need to be uncomfortable in your clothing ever again. Some guys just want to look good without calling attention to themselves. Mack Weldon apparel gives you understated good looks for understated confidence. Mack Weldon clothes are designed to fit your style and the demands of modern life. They look like regular clothes but feel like the latest in modern comfort. They're the go-to choice for guys who want to look great without even trying. Breathable underwear that keeps you cool, dry, and comfy all day. Crazy comfortable but elevated sweatpants. An upgraded classic polo with antimicrobial silver threads. An ultra-soft antimicrobial tee for when you need to stay fresh longer. That's the Silver Crew Neck T-shirt. Get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code MLBSHOW. That's MackWeldon.com. Promo code MLB Show.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Yes, it's that time again. Time for listener trivia. Our way of involving you, our favorite listeners in this show. And Doug, my calendar's correct. It's October, man. It's our finest trivia month of the year. At least it was last year. Can we do that again? I'm going to say no. But you're a believer. You believe in us for some reason.
Sometimes, yeah. I think today, I don't know.
Sometimes. Well,
because the season is shifted because of the lockout. So I think our best week will start next week. But that's all right. Oh. That's just my theory. Yeah.
Okay, suppose somebody actually listens to this on like Thursday or Friday. Then it'll be the postseason for them. But not for us. That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
We don't want to peek too soon.
Yeah, next Tuesday.
Okay.
We're all over it.
All right. That's our story and we're sticking to it. We don't want to peek too soon. You know, we really should be working on a streak of 3 in a row right now, except somehow last week we forgot Bryce Harper's whole career. I don't know how. But we have a fun question this week from a loyal listener who has stumped us before. Not that that's an exclusive club, but let's welcome him back. It is Eric Eisenberg. Eric, thanks for joining us again in the Starkville Trivia Game Room.
Thanks for having me again. Last time I was here, my question, I think, had 7 answers. So this time there's only 1 answer. So I'm trying to help you guys out.
Glanville has banned all questions with 7 answers.
Right. So we're going with 1 answer today.
So, yeah.
Well, I was banned. It wasn't that I banned it. I actually just got banned.
Wait, I mean, we've learned since the ban that we can get questions wrong no matter how many answers there are. But right. I don't know. At least, you know, actually, when there's multiple answers, we feel better because we get
some.
At least 1 or 2 of them, right?
Yeah, so, we get 1 or 2.
Yeah, so I think this we may need to revisit this policy at some point. But all right, so remind us where you're from, who you root for, why you're such a trivia fan.
All right, so I'm from New York originally, live in Chicago now. I've just always been into trivia, you know, especially sports, baseball. I'm a numbers guy, so I'm all into this stuff. So I always listen to you guys, and I always try to submit a good question, and I guess you guys like this one, so.
Yeah. Eric's one of those people out there who every time we ask for questions, we hear from them. I always feel bad. Like, we have a bunch of people like you, Eric, who, like, literally, they hit us with a question every week. And they're good. They're good questions. We just can't bring you back every week.
No, I understand. Okay. And you have to start paying me, right? Yeah.
Okay. That's not going to happen. But we're happy to see you again. Yeah. So let's hear your question.
Sure.
And then we'll go about getting it wrong.
Okay. So you asked who I root for. So I'm from New York, like I said. So I grew up watching the Yankees. My dad actually lived across the street from Yankee Stadium in the Bronx. So we've always been, you know, we went to a ton of games. And the reason I bring that up is because Aaron Judge, of course, has tied Roger Maris for the American League record for home runs. So my question is more of a major league record. Who was the last player to lead the entire major leagues in home runs in back-to-back seasons?
Okay, so he can't just lead
not one. Just one league. It's got to be the entire major leagues, back-to-back.
Okay, and here's the thing we were kicking around before we brought you in. Is this a trick question? Doesn't seem like it could be that
tricky.
I
mean, it's not somebody from, like, the 1870s. You know, you've heard of the
guy. Okay, I know that. Yeah, all right, okay. Like,
it's not a trick question. No, there's no trick. It's,
It just, okay. Right, now, Doug, I know that Mark McGwire did this in 1997 and 98. So that to me means either he is the answer or it's someone since him from the last couple of decades. So what we have to do is think about the big home run hitters of the last couple of decades. What could go wrong? Okay, so Barry Bonds. But I he only led the league the year he hit 73, so it can't be him. Jim Tomei is another one. I'm almost sure he never did that. Sammy Sosa is tempting, but the funny thing is about all the years he hit 60, someone else hit 62. So other than 1999, I don't know if he ever led both leagues, but we can keep him filed away. Ryan Howard is a guy who had a period there for like 4 years where he averaged, I think, 50 homers or close to 50 homers. So He's a possibility. And then who would be the other names? A-Rod, Griffey. Griffey's peak was during the Maguire-Sosa peak. A-Rod spanned a lot of these guys. Frank Thomas, Albert, Miggy. Like me personally, I think it's either Maguire, A-Rod, or Ryan Howard, but I'm not sure as usual. So what do you think, Doug?
I don't think I'm going to be that helpful in this particular
good.
Endeavor.
Great.
I mean, I could add names just to make it harder.
Good.
I mean, I figured one way to, you know, play the game and improve our odds is to just name fielder. Just say fielder. And we could leave it open to whether it's Cecil or Prince. But
or
that
somebody
gives us...
who plays one of the fields.
Yes. So I thought that was kind of cool. I mean, I don't know about David Ortiz. I don't think he really led. Giancarlo Stanton, did he pull that off? John,
I mean, we know he led 1 year.
59, didn't he come?
He was on my original list. I don't know why I forgot to say him. He definitely did it once.
Yeah,
question, 59. So this would have been, he would have had to do it in Miami, right? But he.
That's right.
Health issues? Was he healthy enough?
I don't know.
It's a good name, though. Excellent name.
Good name. All right, good name. What about, like, Chris Carter? Didn't he, like, sneak in there and hit a home run? He led a league.
There's no way.
He had 2 years.
Chris Carter. But Chris Davis, one of the Chris Davises.
Ooh.
what a bad idea.
You double your odds by saying Chris Davis.
That's right.
See, the fielder thing, your timing is off on Cecil. But the Chris Davis thing, now, we can just be vague, right?
Say it's the other one. The one.
I think it's somebody bigger than that, though.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, Ryan Howard sounds pretty good. And I feel like, you know, it would be great for, like, to stick it to us Philly people, you know, to slip in a Philly answer and us miss it like we did with Bryce Harper.
Oh, I see.
I don't have a lot of confidence. I feel like I don't want to go against your grain. I mean, you know, you're for sure with Maguire. At least, you know, it might be, I don't know.
Yeah, like, all right, so if we, here's what our strategy would be. If we answered Maguire... At least we know that that's correct. It's just the wrong years. If we answered Ryan Howard, it would be to try to convince the listeners that we have left from Philadelphia that we still pay attention. That's what you got in mind?
Oh, man. It's like Howard. It sounds so good. Right,
you pick. I don't know what the heck.
I don't have any confidence. I have none. Maguire. I mean, it's like... Yeah, I mean, I just, if you have a bird in hand, I'd rather be wrong in terms of, like, the fact that we got the actual, you know, the information right and got it just the wrong year. Or, yeah, I think that's a better, I know it's a very failure approach there, but I don't really know.
Okay, I get it. So the good news is we only need one answer. The bad news is we have no idea what the answer is. So let's just get it over with. Eric, is there any chance... that it's Mark Maguire from 1997 and 98.
So I think Maguire actually did it 4 years in a row. Not 100%, but I think that's true. But he is not the most recent to do it back to back. So you named Chris Davis and Ryan Howard. I think both of them did it twice in a 3 year span, but never back to back.
Okay.
There's somebody more recent than Maguire that you have not named, by the way. You named a ton of great players, of course, but there's actually one name you have not, or probably more than one name, but there's...
I'll give you a couple of hints,
okay?
Yeah, right. Yeah, we like
so,
that.
So first of all, his first year that he did this, that he led the majors in home runs, his total was 38 home runs higher than his previous best. So he kind of, it was out of nowhere. And then he did it 2 years in a row.
Is this Luis Gonzalez?
No, but that's a good...
He never...
It's a good...
38 more home runs.
He never led the league in homers.
Probably not back-to-back. Right.
And then he just... And then he, out of nowhere, he hit 38 more home runs than the year before.
Yes.
And then
no, not the year before, than his previous best. I think he was 29 years old.
His previous best.
Yeah.
Wow, 38.
Okay, I could throw you another clue.
Okay, it's not like this is like a Max Muncy type thing, but it's not him. Yeah, we didn't need another hit.
Another hit. 38 more home runs. That's a lot of home runs.
He will probably be remembered, if not already. He will probably be most remembered for two incidents on the field.
Batista? Is it Batista?
Yes, Jose Batista.
Oh, very good. Very good.
So he did that in 2010 and 2011.
God, how did we forget that guy?
Well, that was kind of why I asked the question. But yeah.
So did we just get it right or not?
Sure. You got it right. I didn't say the name Bautista. Doug got it right.
Okay,
the mayor is shaking his head. Eric is saying, yes, we did. We need a ruling. Does the mayor get to rule in his own appeal?
I mean, our Supreme Court dissolved last week.
There's a limit to clues, and I think we passed the limit for clues.
Why?
You guys
gave
an
limit?
Answer. You were wrong. Here's why I'm not going to give you credit. Because you listed like 15 guys, and none of them were Jose Batista. If he had been one of the guys, and then with a clue, you're like, oh, Jose Batista, then maybe.
Yeah, the 38 home. Wow, 38 home. That's a good one.
I can't give you this one. Unless Eric has really strong feelings about it.
We'll put a statue up.
Because he's the one who asked the question. So, I guess if he wants to give it to you.
We'll give you a half a point. How about that? You did get it without naming anybody. But
yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, it was a tough one.
I'll take a half a statue.
I wouldn't have asked it if it was McGuire.
We're not taking half points.
There you go.
No,
that's keeps some integrity.
There's no ties in trivia.
All right.
Okay. Either you got it or you.
I was just trying to help out. So I can get it.
All right.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, that was good. Eric, you'll be back. Awesome. All right. we enjoyed thrashing around getting it wrong. I have to admit that we enjoyed the clues, so we feel better because we did finally come up with the name, but we got it wrong. So, all right. Look, this is our final show of the regular season.
That's right.
I think that we should announce our regular season record. I think we're in first place. Yeah, but that's
in Starkville. We're in first place.
See, I think that's that would be misleading.
I actually did the math. I think we're
5-22. Is that right?
5-4. See, you said 5-23.
There's 28 weeks in this season.
Yeah, we didn't do trivia every week.
We didn't?
5-4. No. Yeah, that's
five for 23?
That's what I got.
Not bad. We didn't hit two. We hit above the Mendoza line.
In the off season, you were 8 of 12.
These days, if we slug 600, yeah, exactly. That's a great season.
Okay, so we were 8 of 12 during the postseason and the off season. Over 5-23? That's terrible. That's terrible. Just admit it, Glenville.
It is above the Mendoza line.
Today
the average batting average is like 230.
Yeah, you guys are fine.
Yeah, as long as your slugging percentage is.
I think we have a high slugging percentage. Our OPS is off the charts. And our exit velocity is incredible.
The lack of next year, you guys are going to be helped out.
You know, we're like Franchi Cordero. We look good and playing terrible. So, but let me tell you what's never terrible. That's the part of this segment where the mayor changes the subject just in time by playing another great play-by-play clip involving this week's answer. And I'm just going to take a wild guess that this is going to be a Jose Bautista play-by-play clip. Did I get that one right at least?
Correct. It is not coming from 2010 or 2011, though. I listened to some. His 50th in 2010, not a bad call. But this is the guy with the greatest bat flip.
Yes!
In baseball history.
I was hoping you'd play this.
So let's go back to the Game 5.
I wanted the
American
punch,
League
like
Division
Odor.
Series 2015.
For so long, and it's gonna burn you. No doubt about it.
I feel like Harold was waiting to use that line for like three seasons and finally had it.
That's 100% true. Remember during the pandemic, I was we were killing time trying to figure out how we were going to write about baseball when there was no baseball played. And I was running those strange but true retrospectives and all these crazy things from baseball history. That was the next one. I'd started to interview people about it because that was also the game of the weird, like, Russell Martin throwback to the pitcher that hit the bat and the run scored. And
That was weird. Elvis Andrews. There was some crazy.
It was
plays.
All like it all happened in like one inning. It was the nuttiest postseason inning ever. And it was going to be such a fun thing to write. But next pandemic, I'll do that.
or the 10-year anniversary is only 3 years away. So.
Okay, there you go.
There you go. That's
hey,
it.
Eric, such a great question. Simple, yet so hard. So thanks for coming up with it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Okay, please come back again soon with lots of hints, okay?
Yes.
And if you're listening out there and you'd like to do what Eric just did and be part of this show, guess what? We'll tell you how to do that in just a few minutes.
Strange but true.
So, Doug, it's time for the final strange but true segment of the regular season. And I thought this was obvious because it was so strange, yet so true. This was last Tuesday during Mets and Marlins when Marlins relief pitcher Richard Bleier took the mound. And he made the all-time strange but true balking history. We have to hear this because it is just so bizarre.
Yeah, that's a strike. He thought it was low. And he called another balk. So he balks in a run. And now it's 6-4. Three balks in the inning committed by Richard Bleier. I have never seen anything like that in my life. And now Donnie's going to get himself thrown out. I've never seen a pitcher who had never balked in his career get called for three in the course of one at bat. That's just beyond the pale. And you can understand why Donnie, in his last week of managing the Marlins, is going to get his money's worth here.
Yes, Richard Bleier, in this game, just committed not one, not two, but three balks during the same at bat. John Tim Payne, I hope that's how you pronounce it, the first base ump, invoked the ghost of balking Bob Davidson. And once he called one balk, he just kept calling him. So I thought we should review why this was so strange and yet so true. First off, Richard Bleier is now in his seventh season pitching in the big leagues. He's faced nearly 600 hitters in all that time with runners on base. And how many balks had he been called for when he was pitching to any of those other nearly 600 hitters? That's correct. That would be none. And then John Tim Payne called three balks on him in the same at bat. Okay, moving along here. He was the first pitcher to get called for three balks in one inning in 34 years. Jim Gott was the last one back in 1988. But hang on there, man. This is going to get better. So this happened with Jeff McNeil on the bases. And I figured Jeff McNeil got to ride the balk cycle, right? He was first to second on one balk, second to third on the second balk, third to home on the third balk. The Elias Sports Bureau looked into this one for us. He was the first player to reach base and then ride that balk cycle all the way around the bases since Billy Williams for the Cubs on May 4th, 1963. It was almost 60 years ago, right?
Who did that? Oh, my goodness.
Right. Okay. But now, the fact that it all happened in the same at bat, this is a first in modern baseball history because no pitcher had ever gotten called for three balks in the same at bat. So I was thinking, like, how can I put this in perspective? All right, so, you know, I can do this. Doug, do you know that John Lester, remember him, right, faced nearly 11,500 hitters in his big league career? Well, like, think of all those runners on base. They were all trying to drive him crazy, right? And yet, in all that time, he got called for one balk, and Richard Bleier just got called for three balks while facing one hitter. And so, Doug, Let me ask you, what the heck are we doing? Like, I hate the balk. I hate it. You played 9 years in the big leagues. What was your greatest adventure in balking?
I because of this momentous occasion, I completely drew a blank because I don't think anything could possibly measure up.
That's true.
So everything that happened in my past balk history was therefore erased because it could not measure to the standard, the alien standard of Richard Blyer. Mm-hmm. That's three balks, one batter.
Yeah.
I see it as an honor. If I was a base dealer, if I was Jeff McNeil, I think that is a tribute and you should build some sort of memorial to being balked around the bases. The intimidation that you want to give yourself credit for having and scaring the pitcher into that many mistakes. I think that's amazing. I think you deserve not only a home run, RBIs and a triple. I think you should get a home run and a triple and RBIs on that play for going all the way. Like, Jeff McNeil deserves that.
He drove himself in by scaring.
It's like kind of like a pantomime. You know, you're like miming. I think you've turned the pitcher into a mime. And in all the moves, you realize that he dropped the ball three times. You know, it's like Johnny Cueto. It's that level. But that was the fans, so we got to give them credit. So I love this as a base stealer because your goal was to disrupt and cause chaos in the pitcher's mind. And occasionally you threw him off. And that was like, you know, a bonus. It was even better than a stolen base in some ways. But in this case, I'd like to give a home run, a triple, a stolen base, and an RBI Jeff McNeil.
Let me clear this up. So you think the balk rule, that's a good rule? You do?
In spirit, yes, I do. I think you should not be trying to deceive. I know, like, deceive is a little broad, but you shouldn't be doing something so tricky. Like, you know, step to third and then throw to first.
He didn't do that.
Yeah, no, but, you know, that idea. You got to have some rule about so they don't do something.
But he didn't do that.
No, that's true. But other stuff, there's got to be something. You got to have a buck for those moments. Not necessarily these, but, you know, quick pitching. Yes, I think there needs to be some form of balk. I don't know, you know, like I said, it goes off the rails a lot. I agree with that. But I do think you should not be able to, like, do kind of, you know, I remember Curtis Laskanik. Let me give you one of the better balks that I saw. Desi Rutherford and I laughed so hard. I think, you know, we couldn't even stop laughing. But Curtis Laskanik, he's always quick pitching. So he came set. He threw the pitch in. I forgot who was on first. I don't know who was on first. But anyway, so he came. So just imagine leaning in on the rubber without the ball, right? Catcher throws the ball to Laskanik. He halfway the ball to him. He starts to lift his leg in the windup, catches the ball as he's winding up, and throws the next pitch.
No way.
I think someone literally in downtown Denver called the balk and didn't see it on television. That's how obvious it was. I mean, I've never seen all four umpires call the balk at the same time. He literally used the throw from the catcher to start his windup. His leg was off the ground. And it was like, I mean, Desi and I don't think we stopped laughing. So somewhere we got to find this video. So that is one of the greater balks I've ever seen because it was so blatant and so obvious that everybody, like the whole stadium called balk. Like, it was undeniable. And this was in Colorado. Yeah,
okay, so, Richard Blyer didn't do any of that.
He didn't. But that was entertaining. So my point being is that you can't do that. So you need a balk for that. Not saying what Blyer did, but I'm just saying that is what you have to have some rule to prevent the Curtis Laskanik situation where you're literally winding up so the guy couldn't possibly steal because just imagine a catcher throwing the ball back to you. You're on the rubber. Instead of even catching it, you slap it back to the catcher. You literally like hit it like Hi-Li back to the catcher. You can't have that. That's a balk.
There's no such thing as a Curtis Laskanik situation.
It's not like a situation.
Because it never had, like, it never saw anything like that. I haven't seen anything like it since. If it was a situation thing, it would be happening, and we'd need a rule against it. Just one guy had a brainstorm where he was kind of quick pitch without the ball. I admire the creativity, but in general, I don't admire the balk rule. Here's what I would say to you. The balk rule is an absolutely ridiculous rule, and it needs to go.
But what do you put in place of that? What do you do? You just let pitchers do whatever?
There's no base stealing, so there's no need to deceive the runner.
There's bigger bases now. We're having
maybe
the 30
next year.
Foot base.
All right, I still think. All right, well, next year when there's base stealing again, we'll revisit this. Right now, this particular rule, it needs to go, Doug. And you know who else needs to go? That would be us. So that's going to do it for this week's show. We'll be bringing you podcast magic just like this all postseason long on the Athletic Baseball Show, which is available in its entirety, absolutely free, everywhere you get your podcasts. You know what else, Doug? If you would like to read any of the fantastic writing in The Athletic, it's easy to do. Just go to theathletic.com/baseballshow. And if you're a new subscriber, you can subscribe for just $1 a month for the next 6 months. So don't be tweeting back at me, oh, I'd like to read this. It's behind a paywall. It costs $1 a month. Okay. It's not even a quarter a week. It's the deal of the century. But also, one more thing. You too can be part of this podcast. Every show, we pick a fun listener trivia question, just like Eric Eisenberg's question. Then that listener gets to join us right here and toy with us. Prove once again, there's almost no baseball trivia question we can't get wrong. So how can you be part of the show? Good question. You can email us at starkville@theathletic.com, or there's always the Twitter route. Is there any way for someone to contact, say, Doug Glanville via the Twitter route?
Oh, yeah. I'm very accessible, and you just use my name. Pretty boring. At Doug Glanville, DouGGlan, N as in Nancy, that is, V as in Victor, ILLE. Hit me.
I see. He says, hit me. Careful. And then I am at Jason ST, but just remember to spell my name with a Y, JaySonST. Please hashtag the questions, hashtag StarkvilleQS. Also remember, don't answer other people's questions directed at us. Causes nothing but trouble. So Doug, thanks for playing. Thanks to Dave Sims for visiting us. Thanks to Eric Eisenberg for the great trivia question. Thanks to the mayor of Starkville, Tim McMaster, for producing us and putting up with us, even though he disallowed our trivia answer. And thanks to you all for listening. Tomorrow is Roundtable Day here on the Athletic Baseball Show. And Doug and I will see you next week on Starkville.
Starkville.